Chapter 90. The captain stood rubbing his chin and looking at the manager. The manager glanced at the unopened letters lying on his desk and took up the newspaper. Is there anything I can do for you, Captain Cuttle? ? He asked, looking off it, with a smiling and expressive glance at the door. I wish you could set my mind at rest, sir, on something it's uneasy about, returned the captain. exclaimed the manager, what's that? Come, Captain Cuttle, I must trouble you to be quick, if you please. I am much engaged. ? Said the captain, advancing a step. Afore my friend Waller went on this here disastrous voyage, come, Captain Cuttle, interposed the smiling manager, don't talk about disastrous voyages in that way. We have nothing to do with disastrous voyages here, my good fellow. You must have begun very early on your day's allowance, Captain, if you don't remember that there are hazards in all voyages, whether by sea or land. You are not made uneasy by the supposition that young what's-his-name was lost in bad weather that was got up against him in these offices, are you? Fie, Captain. Sleep and soda water are the best cures for such uneasiness as that. My lad, returned the captain, slowly, you are a mistake lad to me, and so I don't ask your pardon for that slip of a word. If you find any pleasure in this here sport, you ain't the gentleman I took you for. And if you ain't the gentleman I took you for, maybe my mind has called to be uneasy. Now this is what it is, Mr. Carker. Afore that poor lad went away, according to orders, he told me that he weren't a-going away for his own good, or for promotion, he knowed. It was my belief that he was wrong, and I told him so, and I come here, your head governor being absent, to ask a question or two of you in a civil way, for my own satisfaction. Them questions you answered free. Now it'll ease my mind to know, when all is over, as it is, and when what can't be cured must be endured, for which, as a scholar, you'll overhaul the book it's in, and thereof make a note to know once more, in a word, that I weren't mistaken, that I weren't backward in my duty, when I didn't tell the old man what Waller told me, and that the wind was truly in his sail, when he heisted of it for Barbados Harbor. Mr. Carker, said the captain, in the goodness of his nature, when I was here last, we was very pleasant together. If I ain't been altogether so pleasant myself this morning, on account of this poor lad, and if I have chafed again any observation of yours, that I might have fended off, my name is Edward Cuttle, and I ask your pardon. ? Returned the manager, with all possible politeness. I must ask you to do me a favor. And what is it, sir? Inquired the captain. To have the goodness to walk off, if you please, rejoined the manager, stretching forth his arm, and to carry your jargon somewhere else. Every knob in the captain's face turned white with astonishment and indignation. Even the red rim on his forehead faded, like a rainbow among the gathering clouds. I tell you what, Captain Cuttle, said the manager, shaking his forefinger at him, and showing him all his teeth, but still amiably smiling, I was much too lenient with you, when you came here before. You belong to an artful and audacious set of people. In my desire to save young, what's-his-name from being kicked out of this place, neck and crop, my good captain, I tolerated you, but for once, and only once. Now, go, my friend. The captain was absolutely rooted to the ground, and speechless. Go, said the good-humored manager, gathering up his skirts, and standing astride upon the hearth rug, like a sensible fellow, and let us have no turning out, or any such violent measures. If Mr. Dombey were here, Captain, you might be obliged to leave in a more ignominious manner, possibly. I merely say, go. The captain, laying his ponderous hand upon his chest, to assist himself in fetching a deep breath, looked at Mr. Carker from head to foot, and looked round the little room, as if he did not clearly understand where he was, or in what company. "You are deep, Captain Cuttle," apostrophe pursued Carker, with the easy and vivacious frankness of a man of the world who knew the world too well to be ruffled by any discovery of misdoing when it did not immediately concern himself. "But you are not quite out of soundings, either. Neither you nor your absent friend, Captain. What have you done with your absent friend, hey?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, again the captain laid his hand upon his chest. After drawing another deep breath, he conjured himself to stand by. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but in a whisper. "You hatch nice little plots, and hold nice little councils, and make nice little appointments, and receive nice little visitors too, Captain, hey?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Carker, bending his brows upon him, without showing his teeth any the less. "But it's a bold measure to come here afterwards. Not like your discretion. You conspirators, and hiders, and runners away, should know better than that. Will you oblige me by going?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, my lad, apostrophe, gasped the captain, in a choked and trembling voice, and with a curious action going on in the ponderous fist. "There's a many words I could wish to say to you, but I don't rightly know where they're stowed just at present. My young friend, Waller, was drowned only last night, according to my reckoning, and it puts me out, you see. But you and me will come alongside of one another again, my lad," apostrophe said the captain, holding up his hook, "if we live. Apostrophe, it will be anything but shrewd in you, my good fellow, if we do," apostrophe returned the manager, with the same frankness. "For you may rely, I give you fair warning, upon my detecting and exposing you. I don't pretend to be a more moral man than my neighbors, my good captain. But the confidence of this house, or of any member of this house, is not to be abused and undermined, while I have eyes and ears. Good day," apostrophe said Mr. Carker, nodding his head. Captain Cuttle, looking at him steadily, Mr. Carker looked full as steadily at the captain, went out of the office, and left him standing astride before the fire, as calm and pleasant, as if there were no more spots upon his soul than on his pure white linen, and his smooth sleek skin. The captain glanced, in passing through the outer counting house, at the desk where he knew poor Walter had been used to sit, now occupied by another young boy, with a face almost as fresh and hopeful as his on the day when they tapped the famous last bottle, but one of the old Madeira, in the little back parlor. The nation of ideas, thus awakened, did the captain a great deal of good. It softened him in the very height of his anger, and brought the tears into his eyes. Arrived at the wooden midshipman's again, and sitting down in a corner of the dark shop, the captain's indignation, strong as it was, could make no head against his grief. Passion seemed not only to do wrong, and violence to the memory of the dead, but to be infected by death, and to droop, and decline beside it. All the living knaves and liars in the world were nothing to the honesty and truth of one dead friend. The only thing the honest captain made out clearly in this state of mind, besides the loss of Walter, was that with him almost the whole world of Captain Cuttle had been drowned. If he reproached himself sometimes, and keenly too, for having ever connived at Walter's innocent deceit, he thought at least as often of the Mr. Carker whom no sea could ever render up, and the Mr. Dombey, whom he now began to perceive, was as far beyond human recall, and the heart's delight, apostrophe with whom he must never foregather again, and the lovely Peg, that teak-built and trim ballad, that had gone ashore upon the rock, and split into mere planks and beams of rhyme. The captain sat in the dark shop, thinking of these things, to the entire exclusion of his own injury, and looking with as sad an eye upon the ground, as if in contemplation of their actual fragments, as they floated past. But the captain was not unmindful, for all that, of such decent and rest observances in memory of poor Walter, as he felt within his power. rousing himself, and rousing Rob the Grinder, who in the unnatural twilight was fast asleep. The captain sallied forth with his attendant at his heels, and the door key in his pocket, and repairing to one of those convenient slop-selling establishments, of which there is abundant choice at the eastern end of London, purchased on the spot two suits of mourning, one for Rob the Grinder, which was immensely too small, and one for himself, which was immensely too large. He also provided Rob with a species of hat, greatly to be admired for its symmetry and usefulness, as well as for a happy blending of the mariner with the coal heaver, which is usually termed a sou'wester, and which was something of a novelty in connection with the instrument business. And there are several garments, which the vendor declared to be such a miracle in point of fit as nothing but a rare combination of fortuitous circumstances ever brought about, and the fashion of which was unparalleled within the memory of the oldest inhabitant. The captain and Grinder immediately arrayed themselves, presenting a spectacle fraught with wonder to all who beheld it. In this altered form, the captain received Mr. Toots. "I'm took aback, my lad, at present," apostrophe said the captain, "and will only confirm that they're ill news. Tell the young woman, to break it gentle to the young lady, and for neither of 'em never, to think of me no more special, mind you, that is though I will think of them, when night comes on a hurricane and seizes mountains rowling, for which overhaul your Dr. Watts, brother, and when found make a note on." The captain reserved, until some fitter time, the consideration of Mr. Toots' offer of friendship, and thus dismissed him. Captain Cuttle's spirits were so low, in truth, that he half determined, that day, to take no further precautions against surprise from Mrs. McStinger, but to abandon himself recklessly to chance, and be indifferent to what might happen. As evening came on, he fell into a better frame of mind, however, and spoke much of Walter to Rob the Grinder, whose attention and fidelity he likewise incidentally commended. Rob did not blush to hear the captain earnest in his praises, but sat staring at him, and affecting to snivel with sympathy, and making a feint of being virtuous, and treasuring up every word he said, like a young spy as he was, with very promising deceit. When Rob had turned in, and was fast asleep, the captain trimmed the candle, put on his spectacles. He had felt it appropriate to take the spectacles on entering into the instrument trade, though his eyes were like a hawk's, and opened the prayer book at the burial service, and reading softly to himself, in the little back parlor, and stopping now, and then to wipe his eyes, the captain, in a true and simple spirit, committed Walter's body to the deep. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.